Good morning, everyone. We are in Book 3, the Book of the Divine Mother, Canto 3, and we are on page 321. But just before we start, I'm going to explain this pile of books here. Last week, I think I spoke about the lecture that I gave last August. So this little book has the text, full text, and Manohar's very nice film. So anybody who would like to have one can take one at the end of the class, and you can fill in a slip if you have an Auraville account to transfer something, 100 rupees each there, I think.
Just had another bike accident.
Oh, Mariage is okay?
Yeah, I heard
from you. Quite a big party arriving. Oh gosh.
It seems to work with this.
Yes.
It's time you bought a nano, Don. Time you bought a nano. This little car.
Oh.
It's a little bit safer than a scooter for the two of you.
But this was really so stupid. We were virtually in, turning into the thing there. I'm just going to pass on the run.
Or somebody on the road. So, I start again. Welcome everybody, all in one piece, welcome. Today's an 8-day, a protection day. So, although accidents have happened, they could have been much worse maybe. Antim's just had to rush off because his brother was here from Chennai and they had an accident in their car on the way into Auraville. So, but nobody was hurt and everything is okay. So we are on page 321 in the middle. And I had just announced before so many people came in about this pile of books here. This is the text and the film of the fourth Dr. M.V. Nadkarni lecture, which I gave last year. And it's called The Traveller and the Worlds. And it's about Aswapati, the whole story of Aswapati in part one. So that includes book one, the cantos there, all the cantos of book two, and book three, which we are in the middle of now. So you may find it interesting. So anybody who wants can take one of these at the end. So we were reading on page 321. In this canto, at the beginning, we saw Aswapati. In the previous canto, he has had this wonderful vision of the Supreme Mother. And that makes him aware that the only thing he wants to do is to be able to embody her power and her love and carry it back with him for earth and men. He wants to call her power down to transform the earth. But in order to do that, he discovers that he has to overcome even further resistances in his own being. The resistance which is there in the very texture of our humanity, in the substance. And to do that, he makes a supreme act of renunciation and tears desire up from the bleeding roots so that he can offer to the gods, to the higher powers, the empty space, the vacant space. And as a result of that renunciation and deep aspiration, a last and mightiest transformation came. And the last 2 weeks we've been reading about that transformation. And last week we read how he is overpowered somehow into a state of trance, and out of the body moves beyond the manifestation into what I would call the house of the spirit. And we were struggling at the end of the session last week with this long sentence on page 321, which I'm just going to read now. This is a 20-line sentence, and it ends up, it is a list of things which are typical of our world, but which do not exist there in the world of spirit. There they find no access, no cause, no right to live. That comes at the end of the sentence. First, there's the list of all these things that we can recognize as typical of our experience. So I'm starting maybe I start at the bottom of page 320, where it says, pure and untouched above this mortal play is spread the spirit's hushed, immobile air. There no beginning is, and there no end. There is the stable force of all that moves. There the aeonic laborer is at rest. There turns no keyed creation in the void, no giant mechanism watched by a soul. There creaks no fate-turned huge machinery. The marriage of evil with good within one breast. The clash of strife in the very clasp of love. The dangerous pain of life's experiment in the values of inconsequence and chance. The peril of mind's gamble, throwing our lives at stake in a wager of indifferent gods. And the shifting lights and shadows of the idea falling upon the surface consciousness. And in the dream of a mute witness soul creating the error of a half-seen world where knowledge is a seeking ignorance. Life steps a stumbling series without suit. Its aspect of fortuitous design, its equal measure of the true and false. In that immobile and immutable realm, find no access, no cause, no right to live. There only reigns the spirit's motionless power, poised in itself through still eternity, and its omniscient and omnipotent peace. We discussed it quite a lot last week, but if anybody has anything they still want to ask, otherwise we'll go on. Yes, Dom.
There turns no heat creation in the void.
We talked about this. It's like the idea or the image of a clockwork toy. You have a key and you wind it up and then it just goes running by itself. So there's this idea, philosophical idea, that maybe the creation is like that, that God has just wound it up and set it running, and it's just mechanically doing that. No, so there's no possibility of changing it. And the same idea is then this creaking, no, that the whole universe is just a big machine, and so it makes a kind of machine noise as it turns.
This line, this aspect of fortuitous design.
Yes. Well, this is a paradox, isn't it? If you do something by design, it's intentional and worked out, willed. But life seems to show some kind of perfection of design, but it's as if it happens by chance, fortuitous. So there's some kind of interplay between intention or necessity and chance. That's one of the aspects we experience of life. Mm. Fortuitous, by chance.
And good chance, happy chance.
Not always. Perhaps we use it primarily as for good fortune, but it can be also bad fortune. Bad luck also happens. So we'll go on. Perhaps we'll start this side today. Marco, you can go.
Both clashes not with thought, and truth with truth.
What are you looking up?
No,
fortuitous.
As you said.
Checking on me, John.
I'm surprised. It says often incorrectly taken.
Often what?
Often incorrectly taken to mean fortunate, fortuitous.
It need not be fortunate, though. It need not be fortunate.
So, okay.
Arrival rate.
Arrival is when two people are competing, you know, like in a tennis match. They are rivals. One of them wants to win. So one very prominent aspect of our life here is we have a sense, each of us has a sense of what is right. But our individual sense of what is right may be in conflict with what other people think is right. No? So there's always this clash going on. One right competing, one sense of what is right competing with another. Sorry? Rajas is something very fundamental. It's one of the three gunas, no? So if you are a very rajasic person, if you have a lot of that dynamism in your vital, then you may be always involved in rivalries, in competitions of one kind or another. But we can't say that the two words mean the same thing. Yes.
Is the choice to use like here truth with truth and thought with thought and right with right, where often we think right and wrong or truth and false, is that like implying a one that there is a some oneness and not the duality? You know,
Of course, this is what he says. There is that supreme truth with a capital T, but here in our world of duality, we hold on to partial truths, and they are rivals. They compete and they clash. No, so that's what's happening here. Thought clashes with thought. I think one thing, you think another thing, and even maybe our thoughts are based on truths, but limited truths that are not absolute, and so they come into conflict. And we can see this from the higher levels of our mind. We can see that different positions represent different truths. But in practice, we always seem to have to decide to follow one or the other. No, this is a great difficulty of our life. We have to choose amongst these dualities. So. But there in the house of the spirit, there isn't this problem. There are these guardians who are keeping the law of the universe. And they are armed with a fire which represents the power of will and aspiration, which is immune. Nothing can damage that will in any way or weaken it. It is hidden to us, but that fire is unsinking. It's not that it's sometimes it's burning bright and sometimes it's weak. It's always equally intense. That will is the power that those guardians of eternity have. And they are protecting the law. And that law is based upon truth. But that truth is so vast, it's limitless, really. We can't define it. It is magnificent, but it's also termless. So whenever we find a termless, there's no boundary to it, no limit to it. A term isn't end, terminus.
Not just words that describe it. There are no words to describe it.
No, as soon as we start to put it into words, then we are limiting it. We have to do that. We can't help doing that. But those words can never express the whole of the truth. Yeah.
Who are the guardians?
I don't know who those guardians are. They're powers of the spirit. Don't want to put labels on them. Protective beings, spirits. These last two lines of the first sentence that Marco read are very poignant, no? Suffering of hearts that are compelled to beat in bodies of the inert, inconscious make. Our bodies have been formed, are formed out of matter. They're carrying with them still a lot of unconsciousness. And our hearts are open to higher possibilities, higher feelings, and because of that they suffer from the limitations of our physical being. Let's read on, Manoha. I know you're Gunilla's daughter, but I've forgotten your name.
Jessica.
Would you read Jessica, please?
Their nature, right?
Yes.
Their nature on her dumb spiritual couch, immutably transcendent, knows her source. And to the stir of multitudinous worlds, ascends, unmoved, in a perpetual calm.
Continue.
All causing, all sustaining and aloof. The witness looks from his unshaken poise, an eye immense regarding all things done.
And one more sentence.
Apart, at peace above creation's stir, immersed in the eternal attitudes, he abode, defended, and his shoreless self, accompanied only by the all-seeing one.
Yes. So three sentences. The first one's about nature, the second one is about the witness, and the third one is about Aswapati. I said there are three sentences. The first one is about nature. The second one is about the witness, the Purusha consciousness. And the third one is about Aswapati. He. No, this is yes. At the top of page 321, top two lines, I think, also refers to what we might call nature, the stable force of all that moves. This is the Shakti, no? There she's at rest. The aeonic laborer is at rest. So now he calls her nature. This is the power that drives nature. And there she's on her couch, lying at rest, not expressing anything. There she's in union with her source. The one is the source, no? And there she's unchangeable and transcendent, beyond her action in the universe. So she is supporting all this stir of multitudinous worlds in the manifestation, unmoved in a perpetual calm. This is at very close to the source. And that other aspect in which the One expresses Himself in creation as the witness, the witnessing soul, the Purusha aspect. He's the cause of everything. Nature wouldn't produce any of all this numberless worlds unless the witness were saying yes. He supports and sustains everything, but from a distance, aloof. No? There he's unshaken, poised, watching in the form of this immense eye, seeing everything and supporting everything. So in that state, Asvapati himself experiences this sense of being aloof, apart, above the stir of creation. He's moved into a transcendent consciousness. He's immersed, soaked in these eternal altitudes, heights. He remains there, defended in his shoreless self, companioned only by the all-seeing One. Perhaps this is the highest state of individual awareness. And Sri Aurobindo uses this word defended. I'm always interested in the way he uses this word. It seems to me that he uses it at least with a tinge of its French meaning. Défendu, forbidden, protected. Nothing can touch him there.
Does it, the English meaning implies more of an outer defense?
Of a protection, a defense, yes. I mean, they are close in meaning, but I always get this little French flavor when Sri Aurobindo uses this word. So the description of Asvapati's state, his you want to look what Rand Hicks says about sessions.
S-E-S-S-I-O-N.
Okay. I also feel that Sri Aurobindo uses this word in a very special way, not only in Savitri, but also I found a usage in The Life Divine where it seems to be equal to or equivalent to poise or equilibrium. But the suggestion of this word sessions judges sit in sessions, no, magistrates. Yeah. It means that for a time they are in that official position and they have that power. Here he speaks about the sessions of infinity, and elsewhere he speaks about the sessions of the triple fire, where the triple fire seems to be Satchidananda. I don't know, does the word have any special sense in French?
It's more like sessions, like people meeting together.
Yes, yeah, this is a session, no? We are having a session now. We are sitting together and doing something special. But here it seems to mean a little bit more than that. Okay, yes, he's sitting there in this state of infinity, but he's also, what's the word? He's empowered to do that. He's qualified to do that.
The fact that he joined would mean that he came to this meeting.
He's become fit to become part of this session, of this state, and sitting.
Deliberate sitting. Deliberate sitting.
For a purpose.
Yeah, the root is to sit.
Yes.
But this is the deliberate. So
for a purpose. Yes.
The court is in session. Yes.
Yeah, that's a period of time when people are participating in the functions of the university, and then there are the holiday times when they're not. Yes, it's a state, a particular state. Yes. Yes. Something like that. Yeah. So then the experience is that the contact with the creation, with time-born things, is cancelled. That the sound of the cosmos, the cosmic murmur, becomes isolated, no? And it's as if that whole community of nature in the creation becomes empty. Everything's drawn back to this formless seed, which is the origin, and he experiences a time of complete silence and stillness. And he uses this word cyclic, which suggests that perhaps this state falls upon the world from time to time, that everything is as if disappeared, withdrawn, and there's a state of inner withdrawal.
Makes me think of the beginning, it's the hour before the dawn.
Yes, a cyclic hour, yes, definitely. So let's go on, Stefania.
Also, the afflicted nature he has left.
So he seems to be experiencing that state before creation, before manifestation. But actually, we are told that the world that he's left, the suffering world that he has left, is still there, but he's at a distance from it. No? He feels it as if it's very, very far away, and he's in this state of silence, no voice comes down and there's no response from nature, from the world. So there's this stillness of cessation when everything stops. And that, as Gunilla so perceptively said, that's the wide immortal hush before the gods are born, before the cosmic powers come into existence. So the state is one of waiting. Universal nature, the creative force, is waiting, silent, waiting for a decree, a command from the very highest level, from the veiled transcendent. Yes. Yes. You know, Mother, in her comments about Savitri, has actually interpreted that opening passage of the poem as equivalent to this moment. Before the gods are born. Yeah. But actually the first line says, before the gods awake. And you know, you are familiar with Amal Kiran's explanation about that. So that's a cyclic hour. That's something that's repeated again and again. But anyway, the one, that moment while the gods are all sleeping, it reflects that moment before the creation is set in train. So what is going to be set in train now is a new creation. Asvapati is going to experience the new creation. That's described in the next two sections, which I think we haven't read. Am I right? Anybody's keeping track? We haven't read them. No? So shall we do that now? We'll just read. We can start with you, Susmita.
Then suddenly there came a downward look, as if a sea exploring its own depths, a living oneness widened at its core and joined him to a number of multitudes, a bliss, a light, a power, a flame white, love caught all into a soul immense embrace. Existence found its truth on oneness rest, and each became the self and space of all. The great world rhythms were heart beat of one soul, to feel what the plain discovery of God. All mind was a single heart of many strings, all life a sound of many meeting lives. The words were many, but the self was one. This knowledge now was made a cosmic seed. This seed was chased in the safety of the light. It needed not a sheet of ignorance. Then from the train of the tremendous glass and from the throbbings of that single heart and from the naked spirit's victory, a new and marvelous creation grows.
Thank you. Samadarshan.
Incalculable of flowing in the fields, blocking out an unmeasured happiness leave their innumerable unity. Worlds where the being is unbound and wide, but is unthinkably the egoless self. Rapture of beatific energies. Join time to the timeless. Holds for the seal of joy. White busts. Where seen, where all is rough. No. There were no countries. No sounded part. All by spiritual means were joined to all and bound in this service to the one. Each was viewed, but took all lives as his own, and following out his own of the infinite, recognizing himself the universe, the splendid center of the infinity's birth, fashioned to its zenith height, its light expanding. Felt the divinity of its own self-bliss, repeated in its numberless other selves. He it to cut piracy into its code, persons and figures of the imperson, as if prolonging in a ceaseless count, in a rapturous multiplication sum. The recurring decimals of eternity. None was apart, none lived for himself alone. Each lived for God in him and God in all. Each soulness inexpressibly held the world.
Thank you. Samadarshan. Sudhanya.
Their oneness was not tied to one thing. It showed the conscious aspect of its power, its calm, immutable stability, upborne on a changeless ground forever still. Compared to a spontaneous certitude, the ever-changing incalculable states, the seeming reckless dances, subtle blend of immense world forces in their perfect way. Appearance looked back to its hidden truth and made of difference oneness running away. It made all persons fractions of the meaning, yet all were beings separate. Integers. All struggles must turn to a sweet strike of love in the harmonious circle of a sure embrace. Identities become silent happiness today, a disability to difference. From a meeting, run of analogous extremes, a game of games. Was playing to his little boys. While through self-finding by divine self-loss, their lips called unity's supreme delight, his blissful, undivided sweetness feels a communality of the absolute.
Thank you. Larry.
There was no sob of suffering in me. Experience ran from point to point of joy. Bliss was the pure, undying truth of things. All nature was a conscious front of God, a wisdom worked in all, self-moved, self-sure, a plenitude of illimitable light, an authenticity of intuitive truth, a glory and passion of creative faults, infallible, leaping from eternity. The moment thought inspired the passing act. A word, a laughter, sprang from silence breast. A rhythm of beauty in the calm of space. A knowledge in the fathomless heart of time. All turn to all, without reserves recoil. A single ecstasy without a break. Love was a close and thrilled identity in the throbbing heart of all that luminous love. A universal vision that unites, a sympathy of nerve replying to nerve, hearing that listens to thought's inner sound and follows the rhythmic meanings of the heart. A touch that needs not hands to feel, to clasp, for they're the native means of consciousness and heighten the intimacy of soul with soul.
Thank you. Piero, you like to read?
No, better not. My English is not enough.
Okay. Morrigan, you will read. Huh?
The grand ancestors of spiritual powers, their diapasons of soul interchange, harmonize a oneness deep, immeasurable. In these new worlds projected, he became a portion of the universal gate, a station of the all-inhabiting light, a ripple on a single sea of peace. His mind answered to countless communing minds. His words were syllables of the cosmos speech. His life a field of vast cosmic strips. He felt the footsteps of a million winds moving in unison to a single goal, a stream ever never born that never dies, caught in its thousandfold current's ravishing flow, with eddies of immortal sweetness thrill, he bore coiling through his members as they passed, calm moments of interminable delight, a bliss of your myriad, who are one.
Thank you. Joy, you like to read?
In this vast outbreak of perfection's rule, imposing its fixity on the flux of things, he saw the hierarchy of different things, unfilled to the highest kingdom of God's state, attuning to one truth, their own right rule, each house the gladness of a bright degree, alone in beauty, perfect in set kind, an image cast by one deep force absolute, married to all in happy difference. Each gave its powers to help its neighbors pass, but suffered no diminution by gifts. Profiters of a mystic interchange, gave you by which what they took and what they gave, all others they felt as their own complements, one in the might and joy of multitude. Even in the poise where oneness grows apart, to feel the rapture of its separate self, the soul in solitude yearned towards the all, and the many turned to look back at the one.
Thank you, Patricia.
An all-revealing, all-creating bliss, seeking for forms to manifest truth divine, aligned in purity of the witness soul. These views are the very prism of the Supreme. His beauty, power, delight, creation's cause. A vast truth consciousness took up these signs to pass them on to some divine child heart that looked on them with laughter and delight, and joyed in these transcendent images, living and real as the truths they held. The spirit's white neutrality became a playground of miracles, a rendezvous for the secret powers of the mystic timelessness. Made of space, a marble house of God, it poured through time its works of ageless night, unveiled, seen as alluring, rapturous space. The wonder of beauty is love and force.
Thank you.
The eternal goddess moved in her cosmic house, sporting with God as mother with her child. To him the universe was her bosom of love, his toy for the immortal deity. All your self-flaws have their its divine place. The powers that held betray our hearts and earth were their sovereign instrument, perfect in joy. Masters in a creation without flaw, possessors of their own infinitude. Their mind, a splendid sun of vision's rays, shaped substance by the glory of its thoughts, and moved amidst the grandeur of its dreams. Imagination's great ensorcelling roar summoned the unknown and gave to it a home, outspread luxuriantly in golden air, truth's iris-colored wings of fantasy, or sang to the intuitive heart of joy, wonder's green ropes that bring the real close. Its powers that make the unknowable new and true, in the temple of the ideal shrine, the one. It peopled thought and mind and happy sense, filled with the bright aspects of the might of God, and living persons of the one supreme, the speech that voices the inner door, the ray revealing unseen presences, the virgin forms through which the formless shines, the word that ushers divine meaning, and the ideas that crowd the infinite.
Thank you.
There was no gulf between the thought and fact. Ever they replied like bird to calling bird. The will obeyed the thought. The act, the will. There was a harmony woven twixt soul and soul. The marriage with eternity divinized time. Their life pursued unwearied of her soul. Joy in her heart and laughter on her lips. The bright adventure of God's game of chance. In her ingenious ardor of caprice. In a transfiguring mode, she mapped on time. The fascinating puzzle of events, lured at each turn by new vicissitudes, to self-discovery that could never cease. Ever she frames dark bonds for the will to break, brought new creations for the thought's surprise, and passionate ventures for the heart to dare, where truth recur with an unexpected face, or is repeated old familiar joy, like the return of a delightful life. At hide and seek on a mother's wisdom's breast, an artist teeming with her wide world idea, she never could exhaust its numberless thoughts in vast adventure into thinking shapes and trial and lure of a new living stream. Untired of sameness and untired change, endlessly she unrolled her moving act, the mystery drama of divine delight, the living poet, the world existed. Her carcamonos of significant forms, the coined perspective of the open scenes, the brilliant chase of self-revealing shapes, an ardent hunt of soul-looking souls, a seeking and finding as a cause.
Thank you. Mi Hong.
The matter is the speed form density, an artistry of blood of outwardness of self, a treasure house of lasting images, where self can build a world of pure delight, the home of a perpetual happiness, enlarge the hours as in a pleasant inn. The senses veritable outlets of the soul. Even the youngest child thought of the mind, incarnated some touch of a highest thing. Their substance was a resonant harp of self, a net for the constant lightening of the feet, a motherless power of love's intensity, whose yearning throb and adoration's cry do God approaches through, sweet, wonderful. Its saladut was a mess of a heavenly make, its fixity and sweet permanence of a charm made a bright pedestal for felicity. Its body, woven by a divine sense, prolonged the nearness of soul clasped with the soul. Its warm play of external sight and touch reflected the glow and thrill of the heart's joy. Mind climbing brilliant thoughts, the sweet bliss. Life's rapture kept forever its flame and cry.
Thank you. Helmut.
All that now passes lived immortal there. In the proud beauty and fine harmony of matter plastic to spiritual self-light. If all of ours proclaimed the eternal law, vision reposed on a safety of deathless forms, time was eternity's transparent road. An architect hewing out self's living rock, phenomenon built reality's summer house on the beaches of the sea of infinity.
Thank you. Jean-Yves.
Against this glory of spiritual states, their parallels and yet their opposites, floated in strange, eclipsed and shadow-like, as if the doubt made substance, flickering, pale, this other scheme, two vast negations found. A world that knows not its inhabiting self, labors to find cold and need to be, a spirit ignorant of the world it made, obscured by matter, harvested by life, struggles to emerge, to be free, to know and reign. These were close tied in one disharmony, yet the divergent lines met not. Three powers governs its irrational force. In the beginning, an unknowing force. In the middle, an embodied, firing soul. and it ends as silent spirit denying mind. A dull and infelicitous interlude unrolls its lovely truths with questioning mind, compelled by the ignorant power to place on and to be called her inconclusive tale, the mystery of her inconscient family, and the riddle of being born from night by a marriage of necessity and chance.
Thank you. Gunilla?
This darkness hides our nobler destiny, the chrysalis of faith and even glorious truth. It stifles the winged marble of its state. Leads from the prison of matter to escape, in escape, a great sleep of its beauty and the formless vast. Merged into unordered mystery, lead out in the world's miraculous fate, and yet to hold it to some high spirit's dream, perfect illusion of man's body and mind. A new creation from the ocean rise, the modest and accurate and inarticulate fine speech, beauty suppressed, burst into paradise bloom, pleasure and pain thrive in action of bliss. The tongueless oracle shall speak at last.
Two more lines.
The superconscious world on earth, the eternal wonders join the dance of time.
Thank you. Te queste? No? Patty?
But now all seem the vainly teeming valve, upheld by a deluded energy, to a spectator self-absorbed and mute. Careless of the unmeaning show he watched, regarding the bizarre procession path, like one who waits for an expected end. He saw a world that is from a world to be. There he divined rather than saw or felt, far off upon the rim of consciousness, transient and frail, this little whirling blue. And on it, left like a lost dream vain mold, a fragile copy of the spirit shed, his body gathered into mystic sleep, a foreign shape it seemed, a mystic shade.
Thank you. You want to read, Rosa?
Alien now seems the dream for our universe, self and eternity alone were true. Then memory climbed to him from the driving lens, bringing a cry from one to love, cherished things, and to the cry as to its own lost call, a ray redly from the occult supreme. For ever the boundless oneness dwells, to its own sea tight, unrecognizable, it lives still sunk in its own tenebrous sea, upholding the world in conscient unity, hidden in matter's insentient multitude.
Thank you. Mary Ange? No? Mila?
This seems from in the under meaning, for faith
this glory of divinity, conceiving the omnipotence of its force, conceiving the omniscience of its soul. An agent of its own transcendent will, it merges knowledge in the inconscient deep, accepting error, sorrow, death and pain. It pays the ransom of the ignorant night, redeeming by its substance nature's fault. Himself he knew, and why his soul had gone into earth's passionate hostility to share the labor of an errant power, which by division hopes to find the one. Two beings he was, one white and free alone, one struggling, round, intense, its portion here. A tie between them still could reach two worlds. There was a dim response, a distant breath. All has not ceased in the unbounded hush.
Thank you. Don.
His heart lay somewhere conscious and alone, far down below him, like a lamp in night. Abandoned it lay, imperishable, immobile, in excess of passionate will, his living sacrifice and offered heart absorbed in adoration mystical. Turned to its far off fount of light and love, in the luminous stillness of its mute appeal, it looked up to the heights it could not see. It yearned from the longing depths it could not meet. In the center of his vast and fateful trance, halfway between his free and fallen selves, interceding twixt God's day and the mortal's night, accepting worship as its single law, accepting bliss as the sole cause of things, refusing the austere joy which none can share, refusing the calm that lives for calm alone, to her it turned, for whom it willed to be.
Thank you, Sergei.
In the portion of his solitary dream, it lay like a closed, soundless oratory, where sleeps a consecrated urgent floor, lit by a single and untrembling ray, and an invisible presence kneels in prayer on some deep rest of liberating peace. All else was satisfied with quiet. This only knew there was a truth beyond. All other parts were down in centered sleep, consenting to the slow, deliberate power which tolerates the world's error and its belief, consenting to the cosmic long delay, timelessly waiting through the patient years, the coming that had passed for her and now. This was the final point that called here now.
Thank you, Franz.
Extinction could not quench the lonely fire. It seeing filled the blank of mind and will. Saw it dead, is changeless past about and through. Armed with intuition of a bliss to which some move and tranquility was a key. It persevered through life's huge emptiness amid the blank denials of the world. It sent its voiceless prayer to the unknown. It listened to the footsteps of its hopes. Returning to the void immensities, it waited for the fear of the word that comes through the still self of the Supreme.
Thank you. So next week we'll go back to page 325 at the break, and further back, no, to page 322 at the break. Yes. You have some music for us, Shiv? If you find the Meditations on Savitri passages. Thanks to Sherbindor.